Welcome, everyone, to this really special online event with Neil Donald Walsh on our topic, Conversations with God, the three secrets to end the struggle and start making your life work. I'm Arielle Ford, author of The Soulmate Secret and Wabi Sabi Love, and I'm also part of the wonderful team at Evolving Wisdom, the organization hosting tonight's event. Our mission here at Evolving Wisdom is to give all of you immediate access to the world's leading teachers and human potential experts, as well as create a global community of friends, supporters, and allies to support you on your journey so you can reach your highest potentials in every area of your life. I have the great privilege and honor of hosting one of the most generous, inspiring, and loving people I've ever met. He's my dear friend and our special guest, Neil Donald Walsh. He's a New York Times bestselling author whose Conversations with God books have sold more than 10 million copies over 20 years. I've had the great good fortune to know Neil for more than 15 years, and he really truly is one of the most remarkable men on the planet. He travels all around the world speaking to packed houses everywhere. Hundreds of thousands of people from all corners of the globe have participated in events that we've held with Neil, and each time we create a new one, the response we get is just incredible. We've also partnered with him by offering the Conversations with God 7-week online course that has helped people from around the world completely and totally transform their lives. Now, I've personally been following his work from the very beginning, and I can tell you, nobody holds the keys to ending the struggle in life more than Neil does. He's lived this in his own life, in his own journey, through the depths of sorrow, through hardship and loss, and then he went on to great heights of success and fulfillment. And he now tirelessly devotes his life to helping others experience the same ease and freedom and joy that he's discovered is available when you shift your own relationship to God. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Neil Donald Walsh so we can start talking about the three secrets to ending the struggle and making your life work.
Well, thank you. Those are very kind words, and I have to disavow them immediately and at once.
Well, I've known you a long time, Neil, and you are the real deal. And I'm really excited that we're going to get to explore the topic of ending the struggle. So let's start off by inviting you to share about your own journey, the really painful challenges that you experienced, and how you changed your life from that fateful day when you began a conversation with God.
Well, you know, my life has been a series of very difficult chapters, as well as very wonderful, joyous, and extraordinarily celebratory moments, like everyone else's, I would imagine, or like at least many other people. But it has been the difficult chapters which have brought me the greatest areas of growth. And what happened in my life was that I grew into adulthood feeling that, gosh, you know, life was just a bowl of cherries. I had everything at my fingertips. I had the Midas touch. I had lots of talent, lots of ability, lots of skills. I had some degree at least of charm. I was able to get through life fairly well. And as a young man, I felt like a Michael J. Fox on that television program, Family Ties, from years ago, where he walked around, you know, a little briefcase and a tie, a white shirt and a tie and a suit when he was 16 years old. That was me. I was a corporate executive in terms of how I was modeling myself from the time I was 16 years old. So when I got to be 21 and actually moved into the real world, to me, it was just like arriving at where I had always been. And things fell into place for me. It seemed like, in fact, I did have the Midas touch. I got a wonderful job in broadcasting when I was 19 years old. I became a program director at the age of 21. And in fact, I worked in management positions at every place of my employ. From the age of 21, I was always moved into management wherever I was. So to make a long story short, everything was going well for me in my life. I always earned more money than I needed. I had lots of friends. I had wonderful relationships. Things were just perfect. And then somewhere along the way, I seemed to have lost the Midas touch. Everything began to fall apart. And I suddenly couldn't make anything work. And I got to the age of 50, where I noticed that one thing after another was falling apart. My health was going rapidly downhill. My relationships were falling apart, and I couldn't hold them together, you know, for love or money. And my career as well seemed to have reached a dead end. All three things began to fall apart all at once, as opposed to how it is sometimes in other people's lives. Maybe the career isn't doing so well, but the relationship is solid. Or the relationship's a bit rocky, but the career is doing okay. Or both of those things are fine, but your health isn't so good. But in my case, all three things happened at once. Health failed, career failed, relationships failed. It was the triple whammy. And I wound up sitting there in the darkness of the night one night when I was around 50 years old. And I called out to God, what does it take to make life work? I don't get it. What have I done to deserve a life of such continuing struggle? Somebody tell me the rules. Will you just tell me the doggone rules? I'll play. I promise I'll play. Just give me the rule book. And after you give me the rules, don't change them. Because I always had the experience that I was playing by the rules, and then somebody would change the rules. And so I was deep into depression. And one night I got up and actually wrote those questions down on a piece of paper. And it was 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:20 in the morning. And I wrote those questions down on a yellow legal pad. I was just frustrated and angry and annoyed. And I heard a voice over my right shoulder that said to me, do you really want answers to all of these questions? Or are you just venting? And I said to myself laughingly, like thinking that I'm, you know, talking to myself here, I said to myself, well, of course I want answers. You know, I don't have any answers. If you have them, please give them to me. I actually heard, I want you to know, a real voice in the room. It was not like the sound of my own thoughts. It became that eventually, but the very first communication was an actual voice in the room, as sure as I'm sitting here, I tell you that. So it was an extraordinary moment in my life, and I picked up a pen that I was writing with on my yellow legal pad already, and I began to write down everything that I was hearing in my mind about the questions that my heart was calling out to have answered. And that began what I want to call a dialogue, an on-paper conversation, where I would write down a question, and even before I would get the question written down completely, the answer would already come to me. And I want you to know that the reason I was writing this all out and not just sitting there having it in my mind was the experience was so profound, I wanted to have a record of it. I was keeping a personal journal. I thought, okay, you know, I'm going to journal this out because something's going on here that's quite extraordinary. So I began to do what I thought was a personal journaling process. It never occurred to me in a gazillion years that anybody outside of myself and only myself would ever read or have access to what I was writing there on the yellow legal pad. But about a third of the way through this question and answer process, where I would ask a question and get the answer downloaded to me, I was told this will one day become a book. And I thought to myself, yes, of course, you and 100 other, you know, middle of the night mental meanderers are going to send your writings to a publisher, you know, who's going to say, we got to get this out at once. You know, this guy's talking to God. But in fact, that's exactly what happened. I did send it to a publisher just to test to see if what I was receiving in terms of information had any validity at all. And here was a measurable outcome. This was measurable. It would either be a book or it wouldn't. So I sent it off to a couple of publishers, 5 to be exact, and one of them wrote back to me or called me really and said, you know, we want to publish this book. We want to put this out. And they did. And within 90 days, it made the New York Times bestseller list, much to my shock and surprise, where it stayed for 2.5 years, eventually being translated into 37 languages and read around the world and selling millions and millions and millions of copies. And here I sit now on the other end of that experience. Of course, the experience didn't stop when what became the first book, they just simply took a number of my yellow legal pads, typed them up and put them in the book. But I was continuing with the process because it was for me a very personal experience. That experience continues to this very day.
You know, I just love that story, Neil. And I am so, so glad that you asked God all those questions and turned it into a book, because it impacted my life in such a tremendous way. But what I really want to know right now is, How did life change for you when you applied the insights that you were getting from God? Did the struggles you were experiencing start to disappear?
Well, life changed almost immediately, almost overnight. I had a whole different outlook on life, a whole different reason for living my life, what the French call raison d'être. I had a whole different reason for being. I understood life at a whole different level. I began to comprehend what was really going on here, who I really am, why I'm really here, and what is occurring on the face of the earth among all sentient beings, and for that matter, everywhere in the universe, if you please. And as I began to have that comprehensive view of all that was occurring, I began to apply what I understood in my daily interactions. And the result was an enormous and rapid shift in my relationship experience, in my financial experience, in my physical experience, that is, my experience of physical health. I began to feel better and healthier at 50 and later on at 55 and 60 than I did at 35 and 40 and 45, interestingly enough. I feel healthier today than I did when I was 40 years old. And so those are the three areas of my life, health, finances, and relationship, where I've seen enormous shifts. But here's the irony of it. I really don't care anymore. This is interesting. The interesting thing is that the things I yearned for and were reaching for so earnestly years ago, better health, finally a relationship that works, financial stability, now don't matter to me. I mean, I'm not striving for any of those things. And it seems by some twist of the energy and how it works that when I stopped yearning for it and stopped reaching for it and stopped struggling for it, it fell in on me without effort.
Wow. And isn't that what we all want, just to have it all fall into our lap? So what strikes me right now is that your standing point was that, you know, here you were at this level of devastation and despair, and it's, you know, beyond what many people are experiencing, and yet look what happened.
Well, yeah, what I left out of the story was I wound up living on the street for a year. There was a point in time in my life when not only was everything falling apart, it seemed to me that I had no resources with which to paste it back together. I had no glue, no way to hold it back together. So really, everything fell apart. I wound up losing everything. My family, I lost, you know, through a divorce and a separation and a divorce, I lost my family in a sense. Of course, I had my children that I could visit, but that was, and I lost any chance of getting a job. And then, now get a load of this, to make matters worse, I have an automobile accident. I'm driving down the road, mulling over how bad my life has become. And to make matters worse, a gentleman, a wonderful 85-year-old gentleman, an elderly person, turned right in front of me, smashed into my car, and I wind up with a broken neck. And so, of course, they take me to the hospital, and, you know, they're telling me, you know, you got a broken neck. And, you know, you have to understand that very few people survive a broken neck. And those who do survive it do not survive it. The number of people who survive a broken neck without paralysis, you know, without a terrific shift in their physical experience is minuscule. I somehow escaped that experience, but it took me 2.5 years of physical therapy. I walked around with what they call a Philadelphia collar around my neck for about 18 months, and then they took that collar off, but the physical therapy continued for another year and a half after that, almost 3 years of recovery. During which I could not work, you see, because I had a broken neck and I was very fragile. I was told not to lift so much as a half gallon of milk with my arm extended. I had to make sure everything took place within 6 inches of the front of my body, because if I extended my reach, I was creating pressure on that broken neck and it would cause irrevocable damage. So I learned to live an entirely different way, walk around with a collar supporting my head for a year and a half, and nobody would hire me. I would walk in to apply for a job, and nobody would even talk to me, because who wants to hire a walking, you know, a claim on health insurance? So I couldn't get a job anywhere. I ran out of my savings very quickly, and I wound up living on the street, not for a week, not for a month or two, but for an entire year, 2 weeks shy of 1 year. I was out there on the sidewalk, and the only income I had was what I could get people to give me in the palm of my hand. Sir, do you have a quarter, a dime, just some small change? A little bit could help me. or what I could get by picking up cans and bottles in the park and taking them to the redemption center at the various stores around town and maybe get 35 cents here, a dollar and a half there, three and a quarter here, enough to maybe go to one of the fast food joints and buy myself a burger. And I lived that way for a year. So it went from bad to worse, except that it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Wow. I can't even imagine what that year was like for you. Even though I've heard this story many times, my heart still breaks. But ultimately, it is such an empowering story because so many of us right now feel like life just couldn't get any worse. You know, we have these feelings, this sense of isolation and loneliness, and there are times when we just feel like giving up. And yet, I hear from you there was something very deep and profound that happened to you that enabled you to turn this really dreadful experience into a radically different life where suddenly there's flow and ease and you were able to contribute and impact others with your gift. And I've heard from the graduates of your courses and for those who work closely with you that this is the change that happens, that this is what the transformation that you provide for people. And right now, could you share from your own experience what happens to people when they do embody these same core insights?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to brag, and I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but in fact, what you've said is absolutely true for me, as I've observed people who have done interactive processes with me, either in an on-location workshop, seminar, retreat, or and for that matter, in the Evolving Wisdom courses. That I have already presented, that people have written to me afterward and said to me, I don't know how to tell you this, but my whole life has changed. I just got a notice, a little posting on my Facebook page just 2 days ago from a person who says, you know, I did your course with Evolving Wisdom last year. I've been applying those principles every day in my life since then, and I cannot even begin to describe. There's not enough space on Facebook to describe how everything has changed in my life. Everything this gentleman was telling me, his relationships, his financial life, even, in fact, his physical health. His doctor is saying that his blood count, just to give you an example, he was sharing with me that his blood count had even gotten better, that his cholesterol, you know, had gone way down. And so he was a much healthier person as well. And so I don't want to make that this is not a promise here. I don't want to say to everybody, you know, you do these things and your life will absolutely positively turn around and become, you know, a joy and a celebration, and it can't miss. The truth is it can't miss, honestly. It can't miss, but it may not show up in exactly the way you want it to, in precisely the form you have in mind, or inside of the timing that you imagine should be perfect in your particular case. So those are some of the secrets that I share with people, is that if you can get rid of your expectations with regard to timing and form and content, and allow life to demonstrate itself to you, through you, as you, in the way that it will, rather than the way that you have predetermined it needs to be, you will find yourself in exactly the place that you have yearned to be. However, the purpose of life has nothing to do with that, interestingly enough, and that's what I meant earlier when I was alluding to the fact that when I let go of my need for financial stability, the perfect partner in my life, health, you know, that I look like, you know, one of those bodybuilders. When I let go of all those things I thought life was supposed to look like and just allowed myself to release myself from those expectations, suddenly many of those things, I do not look like a bodybuilder, by the way, but some of the other things actually began to show up in my life and, as I said before, began to fall in on me without effort. I couldn't keep it away from me if I tried. And so I see now that the secret of life is much more profound and applicable to daily experience than I ever thought it was. But unfortunately, nobody came along when I was 6 or 8 or 12 or 15 or 20 or 25 or 30 or 45 or even 50. It took me a half century to even get close to some of these secrets. And frankly, in the past 15 or 20 years, since I've had the conversations with God experience, I've explored them even more deeply and come up with even deeper and, I want to say, newer ways of framing and articulating the insights that I've received in my conversations with God.
So, Neil, you wrote more than 3,000 pages about your dialogues with God, and you've spent tens of thousands of hours teaching since the books have come out. How did you distill the essence of how people can end the struggle in their life with these three secrets?
Well, you know, it's interesting, in fact, how that happened. I never really sat down and tried to codify or summarize or make an outline of what I would call the three major secrets of the Conversations with God material. I'm not sure that I would be capable of doing that because there are, in fact, 3,000 pages of it. I've read those 3,000 pages over and over and over again, but it never occurred to me to try to sit down and reduce it to three simple statements. But what happened in my life was a person who's very, very close to me, one of the best friends I've ever had in the world, came to me, actually rather recently, came to me and said, "Yeah, could I have a minute of your time?" I said, "Sure, of course." And we talked, and I said, "What's up?" And she said, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've read your books, and I believe what you've written, and I've applied it in my life, and for that matter, the books of other masters as well. There are many, many teachers out there and wonderful sources of information. And by golly, I've tried to do all the things those books tell me to do, and nothing is working. And I'm done. I'm so done." And she began to cry a bit. We were having dinner together, and she began to weep a bit. And she said, "Neil, I don't know what to do anymore. I don't believe in this stuff anymore. I don't because nothing is working. And you're my last resort in a sense. Can you help me? Can you tell me? How does it work? And why is it not working for me?" That's how the so-called three secrets of life emerged from me, not as a process or a result of me sitting down and outlining those things after looking at the material again, but rather spontaneously as a conversation that I was having with another person in which I was trying to sift through what I thought I understood and knew on this subject and give it to this person in as brief a time as possible, because we only had a dinner together. We weren't going to spend, 5 weeks in therapy. So it was like, what can I bring to this person? And you know what? Necessity is the mother of invention. Somehow or another, I managed to take the 3,000 pages of material and reduce it to three major bullet points. I didn't plan it that way. It's just how it came out. I said, "You know what? There are three things I want to share with you. Number one, your growth process is complete. Number two, there's nothing going wrong in your life, nor has there ever been. And number three, you're not alone." Yeah, and this person looked at me like, "Could you extrapolate on that a little bit? Can you help me with that?" I said, "Sure." And then I just ran through those points, and it turned out that they are, in fact, what I would call the three biggest secrets that I learned in my conversations with God. Is it okay if I describe them to you?
Yes, I insist. So let's start with the first secret.
The biggest secret of life is that our growth process is complete. In fact, I'll go further. Growth was never necessary to begin with. That you were completely evolved when you came here. That is, at the moment of your birth. You were born in a state of utter perfection. And if you want to see perfection, perfection personified, as I call it, just look into the eyes of a baby. You will see it there. Nothing is wanted, nothing is needed, nothing is missing. You're looking into the face of perfection. But most people don't understand that they were finished with what they imagined they came here to do before they arrived. That the purpose of life was not to somehow get better or grow up, grow up spiritually, or to become somehow more than you now are. That the purpose of life is not to become more than you are, but to be who you are and who you were the moment you arrived. Now, the problem is if we think we are here to become somehow more than we were when we arrived, that the purpose of life is to evolve into something greater, the problem with that is we think that there's something we have to do or to be or to have, that we have to acquire something somehow or another, more wisdom, more understanding, more clarity, and for that matter, that there are physical things we need to acquire as well in order to be the fullest expression of who we really are. But the process works exactly in reverse. In fact, there's nothing for us to be or to do or to have that we are required to be, do, or have in order to express who we really are. The process works precisely in reverse. We are not here to acquire anything, but to give everything. We are not here to acquire, but to give, to demonstrate. Life is about demonstration. It's not about evolution. So we've not come here to somehow get stuff, even to get more wisdom, more clarity, more understanding, none of that. We are here to give and to demonstrate the clarity, the understanding, the awareness, the consciousness that we came in here with. However, the culture teaches us exactly the opposite. The culture into which we were born here on this planet teaches us, you know nothing, you got a lot to learn, you got a long way to go, buddy, blah, blah, blah. And furthermore, interestingly enough, some of the religious culture actually teaches us that what we need to learn, what we need to understand is ultimately ungraspable. That is, it's out of our reach. And what I understood then in this flash of insight that I received in my conversations with God is that you are perfect just the way you are right now. Or to put it in simple terms, which is difficult for some people to grasp or to embrace, you are divine. That is, you are my begotten child. Not just my only begotten son, but you are all my begotten sons and daughters in whom I am well pleased. And your job is not to somehow get better or become more than you are now, but simply to demonstrate who you are right now. And why? Why bother demonstrating who you are right now? What's the purpose of that? So that, I was informed, God might know itself experientially through the expression of life in every one of its forms, including the form that we call you. Now, what this meant to me as a practical matter, how you apply that kind of insight into daily life, because people say to me, well, you know, okay, great, but how does that work in 9-to-5 life, is that I discover that when I give what I wanted to receive as if I already have it, then I would experience the havingness of it. Let me be real clear about that. God put this to me in conversations with God in three simple words: be the source. Be the source became the guiding principle of my life. And whenever I found myself wanting anything, gee, I wish I had a little bit more money right now. Gosh, I wish I had a little bit better, smoother going in my relationship. Gosh, I wish my health was a little bit better. Or I wish I had more wisdom, more clarity, more understanding, more awareness. I wish I had more of something or another. Whenever I found myself wishing for more, I would sit down and think, I wonder if there's anybody else around me in my life, friend or stranger, who also wants more of that, who might even imagine themselves to have less of that than I do. Gee, I wonder how that might work. And I began to decide that I would be the source of what I wished to experience in my own life, in the life of another. And so I went out and looked for people who imagined that they did not have enough money, and I gave them some of the money that I had, even though, as a practical matter, I was experiencing that I did not have enough money. I just decided to say to myself, what if I had enough? What if what I had right now, it was enough? And what if it was so much, in fact, that I could actually afford to give some of it away? And I began to give away what I thought I had not enough of. I did the same thing in other areas of my life. I wanted more patience, more understanding, more compassion, more partnership, really. And I found other people who wanted more of the same thing. It's not easy, by the way, it's not difficult, I should say, I'm trying to say. It's not difficult to find people like that. It's easy to find them. They're all over the place. So I simply found people who wanted the same thing I wanted, and I decided to be the source of it, to be the source of compassion, of caring, of understanding, of patience, of forgiveness, and of companionship, and of love. And what I discovered was that when I was a companion to another and to all others whose lives I touch, suddenly I was companioned and I was never lonely anymore. When I was the source of patience and understanding and compassion in the lives of others, suddenly I experienced those same things flowing through me, because I discovered that what flows through you sticks to you. And I was able to suddenly experience my havingness of what I thought I didn't have enough of. And as I began to experience my havingness of it, that experience of havingness, what I call in my cosmology havingness, that experience of having that actually acted as a magnet and drew more of it to me because my purpose was not to have it all for myself, but to give it away. Now, get this twist. My purpose was not to have it for myself, but to give it away. And when your purpose is to give it away to others, the universe supplies you with an unlimited amount of it because it knows there are a lot of people out there who are suddenly depending on you to be the source of it. And that's the secret of every master who has ever walked the earth. From Jesus to the Buddha to Muhammad to any master who has walked the face of the earth, they have become masters by giving what it is they chose to experience to others, and the universe has supplied them with an ample amount of it that they would never run out because their initial motivation was not to gather it all for themselves, but simply to be a flow through that others might have it in abundance. That's why some of the masters actually said, they said in these words, I have come that you might have life in abundance and live it even more abundantly. That was their whole purpose, their whole raison d'etre. And when it becomes yours and mine, everything will change.
Gosh, I wish you could see me right now, Neil, because I have like the biggest smile on my face. And I feel like there's champagne bubbles going through my entire system because I so really feel the power of what you're speaking to. And let me see if I can just reflect back some of this. So it's like so many of us in the world right now are focusing on our deficiency and our lack and all the ways that we're imperfect and all the ways we need to do, be, or have something else before we get to actually be who we are. And I hear you saying that by giving that up and stepping into a consciousness of my growth is complete and that instead of actually stepping forth and that life is not about me, but focusing on needing to become or do or be something different, but to actually step right now inside the assumption that I am perfect, I'm complete and whole, and if I begin to express that and give it to other people, this is what you're saying. Am I getting that?
That's exactly right. And one of the things people can do right now, by the way, right today as part of this particular seminar, I invite people to take a look at ways in which you have already experienced the completion of your evolutionary process. People kind of like, what? I'm not sure what you mean. I say, no, really. I want you to count the ways. Remember the times in your life when you actually expressed yourself at the level of mastery. What I've discovered is that most people are trained, they're culturalized to deny that. They get into, oh, shucks, you know, this old thing. Kind of like you say to a lady, I love that dress. Oh, shucks, this old thing. So we're culturalized to deny it. But when gently required them, no. I know there was a moment in your life when you said or did something that only a master would say or do. What was it? They could almost all come up with one or two of those things. I say, aha. So that was a case in which you knew who you really were and you expressed and experienced that. And we began to gather the stories in real time of people who could, in fact, acknowledge and express their mastery. And I said, now that you think that was an unusual thing, that it's something that is not part of your real nature, and that you somehow simply rose to the occasion. But I am telling you that you are rising to the occasion all the time. How do you suppose you've gotten through to this moment right now? You're talking to me now and telling me nothing is going right. Things are horrible. I can't take it anymore. Yet here you are still at the front lines. That is mastery. And that is evidence of mastery. That is evidence of your mastery. And your willingness to even search for the next answer is evidence of your mastery as well. Now let's just take that evidence and turn it around and allow other people to experience the mastery that you have already demonstrated. And you will see the whole of your life shift virtually overnight.
So I'm imagining what it would be like to live life with that kind of consistency without any kind of attachment on what's going to happen as a result of that, and to be able to generate a very different energetic vibration, the frequency, you know, around me and my relationships to life, and And I can see how huge changes could happen really, really quickly. This is just so exciting. So you covered the first secret, that our growth process is complete. What's the second secret, that nothing is going wrong in life, nor has it ever?
Well, you know, the second statement that just erupted from my being when I was chatting with my wonderful close one recently is that everything in life is going perfectly and you think that it's not. And so the secret here is to turn frustration into celebration, because what you resist persists. Yet what you look at through the eyes of your soul disappears. That is, it ceases to have its illusory form. But we don't understand, most people, and I didn't either before my conversations with God, why are things turning up the way they are? It's all very nice to say that everything is perfect, but it sure doesn't feel perfect to me. Unless you know what it is you're trying to do, and unless you deeply understand the process that is required in order to do it, in that case, you would see the perfection. And that was the second simple statement that Conversations with God gave me. Statement number one, be the source. Statement number two, see the perfection. These are three-word statements that shifted my whole life. Be the source, see the perfection. Well, how could I see the perfection of living on the street for a year, or having no money, or having my relationship fall apart and my family ripped away from me, and my health going downhill? What's perfect about that, do you mind if I ask? And God would say to me, look, what is happening here is that you are expressing and experiencing the essence of who you really are. And in order to experience the essence, and you're doing that, by the way, God said, as, how can I put this in the vernacular to make it simple, as a favor to me, so to speak. That is, God has created the experience of life itself in physicality as an expression in experience of who and what divinity actually is in its totality. God simply seeks to know itself experientially and is using what you and I call physical life and everything in it, including us, as the means by which to do that. But here's the great secret that Conversations with God told us. In the absence of that which we are not, that which we are is not. That is, it can't be experienced. It can't be expressed. And God gave me a very simple example so that my mind, because my mind couldn't wrap itself around that. You know, when God said that to me, I said, oh, come on, help me out. I mean, I'm not really very advanced here in my thinking process. Could you make that simple for me? God said, sure. Supposing that you decided that you are the light. Let's use a really simple, simple example. Just say these words to me, Neil. I am the light. I said, okay, I am the light. God said, great. Now, how would you know you are the light if there weren't darkness? If you were like a candle in the sun, you'd be there all right, along with a million kajillion other candles, but you wouldn't know yourself as the light because you are, in fact, amidst a million kajillion other candles. The sun wouldn't be the sun without you, by the way. Nay, it would be the sun without one of its candles, and that would not be the sun at all. But how to know yourself as the light amidst the light? And I said, you know, to God, well, you're God, figure something out. And God said, I already did. I will surround you with darkness. Yet when you are surrounded with darkness, raise not your fist to heaven and curse the darkness not, but use the darkness that you might know who you really are. Be a light unto the darkness, that you might express who you really are, and that all those who see you would know who you really are, and by the light of your example, who they really are as well. So I said to God, okay, great example. I like the illustration. I mean, my mind can hear that, but how does that work on day-to-day on-the-ground life? How do I deal with the so-called darkness that's being foisted upon me, that I encounter every day in my life, to say nothing about the world around me? God said, there's a real simple trick here, Neil. It's called gratitude. Gratitude is the attitude. Your job is to be grateful for That is to be thankful for every condition and circumstance of life, no matter how imperfect you imagine that it is. Because in fact, it is perfectly designed, perfectly created, and has been called forth by you and all those around you in a collaborative effort in a perfect way to present the perfect opportunity for you to perfectly express perfection itself in you, through you, as you. So if you wish to express yourself as kindness or compassion or caring or patience or understanding or love or forgiveness, would you not need conditions and circumstances within which you could become kind, caring, compassionate, loving, and forgiving? Would you not need something to forgive in order to experience yourself as forgiving? Well, yes, I would, God, yes, but does it have to be so much? God said, depends on how much of a master you want to be. The higher level of mastery you call forth, the higher will be its opposite number in the contextual field. But if you judge it, make it wrong, if you resist it, it will become virtually, in your imagination, insurmountable. Only by embracing and accepting it, by actually blessing it, by actually, if you can imagine, being grateful for it, by saying, thank you, God, for this one more chance to announce and declare, to express and to fulfill, to become and to demonstrate who I really am. And that's why every great teacher, and one of my favorite teachers is Jesus, so I often use him a lot, but all the great teachers in their own language have all said the same thing. Bless, bless, bless those who persecute you. And be a light unto the darkness. And curse the darkness not. And if a man asks you for your shirt, give him your coat as well. If a man asks you to walk 1 mile with him, go with him twain. And when the world feels like it's falling in on you and crashing in on you, at that moment, announce and declare, ah, thank you, God. Thank you, God, for this one more chance to demonstrate who I really am. And by the way, such a mental attitude is transformational. You can then be in this world, but not of it. Standing amidst the ruins all around you, and people will look at you and say, what is it you have? What is it you know that I don't appear to have or know? And then you can say, come here with me. Let me show you. And when enough people understand what you understand, embrace what you embrace, and demonstrate what you demonstrate, all the stuff that causes the world around us to fall apart begins to disappear, because it is no longer needed as a contextual field within which we can express and demonstrate who we really are. We begin to push it further and further away from us, even, in fact, ultimately off the entire planet as well. But a lot of people say, you know, I've tried this, Neil. It hasn't worked. How much longer does this not having what I want have to go on? It will go on as long as you say that you do not want what you have. If you want what you have, you will ultimately have what you want. But if you say, I don't want what I have, then you are denying the very gift that makes it possible for you to have what you want. You are literally pushing away from you the circumstances, conditions, and situations that make it perfect for you to demonstrate and experience what it is you wish to have. Even if you had it, you wouldn't even know you had it. You wouldn't even know that it's part of your reality, because you are pushing away its opposite number. What you resist persists, and what you look at disappears. That is, it ceases to have its illusory form. Therefore, give that which you wish to receive, and share that which you think you have not enough of. And you will discover that part two of the process is absolutely true. Your life is perfect just the way it is right now. There's nothing going wrong. Everything has occurred exactly the way it needed to occur in order for you to express and experience who and what you are right here, right now. But as long as you make it wrong and say, Neil, you don't understand. Something terrible happened to me when I was 7. I'll never forget it. And you don't understand. To the degree that you make what's going on wrong, to that degree, you'll make it very difficult to experience what life is designed for you to experience, who and what you really are.
Is there a way you can sort of take us through, you know, what does it look like for a person to start doing this in their life? Like, what would start to happen and change as a result of beginning to live inside a consciousness that there is nothing wrong with their life and wanting what they have and turning towards life as opposed to away from it? Could you somehow model this for us?
Sure. I'll try. Let me use the example of the person perhaps who's in an abusive relationship. It could be an abusive marriage or an abusive relationship at work where the boss is just being unkind to you and verbally abusive every day, or in any other situation. It could be more serious or less serious than that. But a lot of us have been in those kinds of situations and circumstances, and regretfully, some people are already in a dangerous situation around that, where the person they're living with is actually physically abusive and could be endangering their health or if not their very life. So let's talk about that just for a second. If you were to apply these principles, of course you would not sit there and say, bring it on, abuse me more, I'm just a doormat, walk all over me. No, of course you would not do that. But what you would do is you would discontinue imagining or thinking of what's occurring as somehow imperfect. You would in fact say to yourself, ah, I see. This is occurring perfectly in my life right now, that I might announce and declare, express and fulfill, become and demonstrate who I really am. And part of who I really am is not only a person who forgives others when they have forgotten who they really are, but also one who loves the self. That I choose now to demonstrate my love of self, and this situation has been perfectly co-created by the lot of us to allow me to demonstrate my love of self. So now I can finally answer the question, what would love do now? Love for myself, and indeed love for the other. I know that these behaviors that you're demonstrating are not new to this particular experience of you and I. I get that this is your deepest understanding of the only way to be and to survive in the world. I'm going to love you out of that. I'm not going to make you wrong for your behaviors because I understand them. I get that the sins of the father have been visited upon the sons, even unto the seventh generation. I get that you are deeply mired in the illusions of life that drive the engine of your experience. I get that. And so I don't even have to forgive you for the abuse that you have placed in the space of our experience. But I will tell you that I will no longer receive and accept that level of abuse from you. I will love myself enough to remove myself from the space of that abuse, and I will love you enough to tell you that you're demonstrating yourself in this particular way. It's not the highest and most glorious aspect of who you are. And in living in that way, when we give ourselves the strength and the courage to remove ourselves from situations such as that, we sometimes discover that the worst thing that ever happened to us turns out to be one of the best things that ever happened. I've talked to more people than you could ever imagine who have gone through experiences such as this, who have said to me, in some strange, convoluted way, the worst thing of my life turned out to be the best thing that ever happened.
I so get this. That's been my experience as well. The worst thing somehow turns out to be the best thing. And I'm really seeing even more clearly that by being in the experience of life, inside the consciousness of there is nothing wrong, we now have full access to our power.
I think you've just hit it. You've really just hit it, because I think that the idea that there's nothing going wrong in my life was one of the biggest shifts and changes that could ever have occurred in my consciousness. I began to stop condemning the many things that looked like were going wrong in my life and to use them as tools in the creation and the recreation of who I really am.
Oh, God, that's so wonderful.
But you know what else it did? It removed from my consciousness resentment, anger, disappointment, frustration, and righteousness. And when those five elements are removed from one's consciousness, all the poison disappears. We can even look at our so-called enemy, the one who did it to us, with kindness and love and caring and compassion. And that's the greatest healer of all.
so when you remove all of that, then what's left is kindness, compassion, love, care, power, clarity, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So all those qualities of strength that give us access to a life that is easy and flows and where we can be living in the center of our own calling, our own destiny. Gee, Neil, I feel like I'm really getting this. This principle, I know you've spoken about it before, but I'm really getting this on a deeper level.
Let me tell you about the third secret of life, because it's the most important, and I want to make sure we get to it before we run out of time. And the third secret of life is that you are not alone. You are not alone in this process that we call life. And what I observe in people that I've worked with individually is that they think they are alone, and that's what makes it intolerable. Almost any experience in life can be embraced and tolerated, if you please, if we imagine that we are at least in a shared space with another and that we have someone that we can talk to about it and get help from, and that we're not alone around all of that. Loneliness is one of the biggest emotional loneliness, even, and I mean just physical loneliness, because you can be in a relationship and still be emotionally alone, as people have discovered. You can be in a house full of people and be emotionally alone. But emotional loneliness is the biggest single problem facing humanity today. By the way, that's why the most severe punishment that any system can impose upon you in any penal institution is solitary confinement. They're very clear that being alone is the worst thing that people could have happen to them, being forced to be alone.
Wow, that is an amazingly profound insight.
For me, it was, because I suddenly understood that. Look, let me back up and put it to you this way. We know at a cellular level that our basic nature is that we are not alone. That is, that we are all one, and therefore that we are never alone in the sense of everything else is part of us. We know that at a cellular level. That's why the impulse of all of life is to move toward life itself. You can't pass a flower without picking it up and wanting to put your nose into it. When I see lilacs bloom in the spring, I've got to go over there like Ferdinand the Bull and put my nose right in the middle of the lilacs. And I stand there and I smell them. I move toward all of life in that way. The impulse of life is to merge with other life, to experience that merging, in fact, is not even necessary, to experience that you are already merged. But when you don't know that, then you have an emergency. That is, you face a critical spiritual problem, a critical spiritual passage in your life when you are not clear of your basic nature. But the basic nature of life is, and the basic impulse is, to express our oneness and the fact that we are not alone in the sense that everything else is in the same boat with us, that we're all together, if you please, that we are all one. Now, that's why when we have life experiences that run against that basic nature, we wonder what's going on. We said to wife, I don't understand. I don't understand. Why is it like this? The feeling of aloneness or emotional loneliness is just about the worst feeling we can have, because it bumps up against and contradicts our very nature. Again, that which we know at a cellular level must be true. The antidote to that is twofold. One, to hold as truth that we are never alone. That God, well, first of all, that there is a God that exists. There is in fact a thing called God. Call it whatever you want, Yahweh, Jehovah, Allah, Brahman, by whatever name and whatever label it suits you to refer to that ineffable essence that is the divine, as I mentioned earlier. So we notice that God exists. God is. And secondly, we notice that there's no place that God is not, that God is not here and not there, you know, up there but not down here, but that God is everywhere. We notice that God is everywhere all the time, and that God will show up in your life in surprising ways and in unlimited numbers of forms. That is, that there's no limit to the forms that divinity will take to demonstrate itself to you if you are unable to demonstrate God's self as you in you. And life will continue to inform life about life through the process of life itself. And God will continue to demonstrate God through the process of being God itself. For instance, this very program, this very seminar that people are taking right now may be one of those forms. Wouldn't it be interesting if that what's happening right now, if the fact that people are listening to this message right now is God's way of saying, you know, could I be more obvious? Could I be more direct with you? Who do you think set this up this way? How do you think you happen to even find out about this particular seminar that you're now taking? How did you find yourself drawn to the information about where to call and when to call and how to sign up and how to become part of it? And what are you doing sitting here listening to this right now? If this isn't divinity demonstrating itself to you vividly, allowing you to know that you are not alone, then what is? So for me, the awareness that divinity is with me, part of me, in me, as me, and surrounds me, all around me, has allowed me to not feel alone. I can go to sleep at night and I have actual conversations. I mean, I sit and I say, hey, God, you know, nice to have a quiet time with you. Glad you're here again. And God says to me, by the way, a wonderful statement in conversations with God. You might recall this statement, I have sent you nothing but angels. This gets back to point number two, when we want to make the other person the villain in our story. But not only the villain, but the heroes as well in our story are all aspects of divinity demonstrating itself to us. I have sent you nothing but angels has been an extraordinary insight and awareness that I've brought into my life. But the biggest insight and awareness is that God itself, in its highest and grandest form, is always with me and never apart from me, and that I can talk to and communicate and access and become aware of and receive assistance from that aspect of the overall ultimate reality at any time that I wish. Now, here's what happens. If we are conscious of the fact that God is always with us, God's revealing of itself to us will become more obvious to us. That is, you'll start seeing God's messages everywhere. Honestly, you'll be driving down the road. It'll be on the billboard, on the sign on the highway, or the chance utterance of a friend on the street, or the lyrics of the next song you hear on the radio, and you'll slap your forehead with the palm of your hand and go, oh my goodness, there it is again. Because the fastest way to experience that you are not alone in your life and that God is present always in your life is to be the source of that experience in the life of another. Someone else is looking for God. Someone else is looking for companionship, for help, for understanding in their life right now. Indeed, someone else is begging for it. But so long as you imagine your life is all about you, you've got to solve your problems first before you can solve it anywhere else, you will have missed the fundamental essence of this message and the primary purpose of life itself. However, if you decide that your job in the next 24 hours, to say nothing of the next 24 years, is to be the source of God's presence in the life of another, you will experience God's presence in your own life immediately and automatically. It cannot be any other way.
So, Neil, what happens then for a person when they begin to experience this sense of connection? How does their life change?
A level of peace, a level of, I mean, you know, what they call it, a peace that passeth all understanding, truly does embrace you. You begin to deal with the challenging moments of your own life in an entirely different way. And you begin to find an inner serenity that you really, really did not know was possible. You can find that in meditation, in prayer, in other certain kinds of spiritual practices. And those are wonderful practices. But we're talking now about experiencing or about having those kinds of experiences in the everyday moments of your life. That all of life, in fact, turns out to be a meditation. All of life turns out to be a prayer. And we begin to experience that when we embrace the ever-present notion of God's eternal guidance, wisdom, understanding, clarity, and oneness, that God's eternal oneness with us. But, you know, the true reward comes in flipping the axis of our life. If God said something of prime importance to me in conversations with God, and she did, it was this. It was when she said to me, "Neil, your life has nothing to do with you. I get that you think that it does, but in fact it doesn't. You're done. You're complete. Everything is over, finished. You don't have to evolve. You don't have to grow. Neil, your life has nothing to do with you. It has to do with everyone whose life you touch." And that doesn't mean be self-effacing and self-sacrificing and do nothing for yourself. Quite to the contrary. Everything you do, you will do for yourself because there's no one else to do it for. However, it means that how you act on your own behalf will be demonstrated in such a way that everyone whose life you touch will be given back to themselves. They will see by the light of your example who they really are. Therefore, in fact, step into the world, knowing that not only is God with you always, but that God is with everyone else as well through you. Dare you to say it. Dare you, double dare you. God has arrived in your life this minute because I am here. I am here with God's love. I am here with God's forgiveness. I am here with God's compassion. I am here with God's understanding. I am here with God's acceptance. I am here with God's awareness. I am here with the presence of divinity through me, as me, for you. Not because I want to show myself how wonderful I am, but because I choose to show you the truth of who you are, to give you back to yourself. God has arrived just now. Watch, listen, see, and don't deny. You see, the most fundamental aspect of divinity that we choose to express in us, through us, as us, is the fact that we need nothing. Suddenly, what occurs in our relationships with other people, both those who are intimately close to us as well as those who are on the outer circle of our acquaintanceships, our relationship with all other people has a whole new flavor and a whole new nuance to it. It's a flavor and a nuance that has nothing to do with need. It says essentially to others, there is nothing I need from you in order for me to be happy. You are free at last to be who you truly and really are, to demonstrate yourself as you wish. I need nothing from you, and I require nothing of you. That, and when people begin to feel that from us, that shift that takes place, by the way, this is how God interacts with us. This is what it means to be in the presence of God, to demonstrate the presence of God, and to experience the presence of God. When we experience the true presence of God, and I have experienced that, we experience being in the presence of some entity, being, or essence that requires, needs, and demands nothing from us, nothing whatsoever, but that accepts us just exactly the way we're showing up right here, right now. When we demonstrate that to others to the degree that it's possible for us to do so, when we demonstrate that to others, they begin to feel suddenly uncommonly safe in the space of us. And when they feel uncommonly safe, they themselves become uncommonly safe with us. Suddenly, all the barriers drop. We become truly naked with each other, not simply physically naked, but naked in every possible way. That is, fully present and completely visible in the truest essence of who we really are. People gravitate to that. That is that impulse I spoke of earlier, that people are naturally searching to experience and to complete that impulse of oneness. And they feel the safety of doing that, and they are magnetized to us. Since this has become the primary experience of my life and the expression of who I really am, I have discovered that people everywhere, this is hard to say, it's difficult to say in public, but honestly, people gravitate to me. I'm not in search of friends. I couldn't be lonely. You know what? I couldn't be lonely if I wanted to. It's impossible. See, because people want what you've got. And in fact, they already have it. They simply don't know it. So all God does is remind itself of itself by being itself. Did you hear that? I said all that God does is remind itself of itself by being itself. So you go around and remind all the other aspects of divinity of who they really are by demonstrating who you really are. Let your life so shine before men that they will see who you really are and see themselves in the light of your example. Or as someone put it once before, vividly, I have come that you may have life and that you may have it more abundantly. That's why I am here. And so it turns out, after all, that life is not about get the guy, get the girl, get the car, get the job, get the house, get the office in the corner, get the kids, get the grandkids, get the promotion, get the bigger house, get the bigger car, get the gray hair, get the retirement watch, get the sickness, and get the hell out. There's more going on in the process of life. In fact, all that I've just said has nothing to do with it. And yet all those wonderful things can be experienced by us, through us, as us. The things we want in our life, relationship, right livelihood, an experience of full expression, creativity, dynamism, wonderfulness, joy, family, all the things we yearn for will come to us without effort when we apply these three secrets.
God, I love that. And it even gives me chills because it feels so perfectly, well, just the way you're describing this feeling of suddenly being able to be completely comfortable in your own skin. And that's just something so critical to living a life that's consistently joyful.
Boy, is it ever. I'm telling you right now, people experience life as a challenge, a trial, a travail, like slogging through water that's waist deep. And it doesn't have to be that way, Ariel. I promise it doesn't have to be that way.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you so much for sharing your incredible insights with us. So I know that many of you are wondering, how can you possibly take a deeper dive with Neil on these principles? So if you're in front of the webcast page, I want to invite you to go just below the audio player. And under the play button, you'll see that it says, visit the Conversations with God course information page. So just click on that link, and for those of you who aren't in front of your computer right now, don't worry. I'm going to give you everything you need, the entire overview of exactly how this is going to work, so you too can participate in the Conversations with God 7-week online course with Neil. So as you're scrolling down the page, you're going to see where Neil talks about his experiences and the course as a whole. So scroll down all the way until you see what you'll learn in the course. And then you're going to see that it says, step one, recognize what's missing in your life so you know what needs to change. And in step one, which is the first week of the course, Neil is going to guide you through the process of recognition so you can begin to finally clearly see what needs to change in your life. And it's by having this kind of clarity that you're going to be set up to make the changes that matter the most to you in the 7 weeks of the course. Course graduates describe the experience this way. They say that step one is really their aha moment, the aha moment when they realized the difference between what they thought they wanted in life and what they really need in order to feel deeply happy and at peace. And you'll see that once you take the step, you'll feel freer to pursue the dreams you wouldn't have considered pursuing in the past, because you'll now have clarity around what you really, really need to make you happy. And you're going to feel more inspired and more creative about the short and long-term steps that you need to take in order to set your life back on track towards the happiness and fulfillment you so deserve. One more thing here. You're going to recognize that certain people in your life are either helpful or toxic to your well-being. And you'll begin to feel empowered to make the right decisions about your relationships.
Now, in step two, explore the vision for your best life so that you can manifest what you really want. And in this step, you'll discover the true nature of God and exactly what it is that God expects, requires, and demands from every human being.
Oh, God, I can't wait for that one. And I also know that you're going to be covering why wanting something is the least beneficial thing you can do as you invoke the laws of the universe, and what to do instead to bring everything you need into your life. And I actually know the answer to this one.
Yeah.
And when you taught me that years ago, giving up wanting gave me everything I ever wanted.
You know what's fun? You said, oh, God, I can't wait to hear this one. And like you were talking right to God. I loved it the way you said that. Because we all are, in fact, talking to God every day of our life. And a four-step process is part of step two, by the way, Ariel, a process that can resolve internal conflicts and external complications more quickly than anything you might have previously imagined was possible. It's kind of like an aspirin, like a spiritual or metaphysical aspirin for healing the headaches of life.
Okay, I'll take two bottles of that healing the headaches of life aspirin.
Step number three is to discover the system of the soul. Now, this is, I think, one of the most important things I could ever share with anybody. To discover that system so that you can understand exactly how to create the life that you want. In step three, you'll discover how to quickly and easily change the thoughts and emotions that have been driving your previous experiences in life so that you're no longer at the mercy of what happens to you.
I know in step three, you're also going to be sharing how to bridge the gap between the mind and the soul.
Yes.
And then teach us how to access your soul's wisdom.
I think it's the most important teaching that anyone could receive in life, how to access your soul's wisdom with a step-by-step process for creating your reality moment to moment so that you'll always feel that the divine is working through you.
And then step four, we have complete with the past so you can remove hidden blocks and enter a grander future. What will we get there?
How to be able to identify, that's what we're talking about here, without hesitation, without shame, and without guilt, how to identify any emotional incompletion or hurt in your life, including hurts that others may have imposed on you, as well as hurts that you may have inadvertently imposed on others. Now, in step number five, we're talking about how to finish your unfinished business so that you can stop self-sabotage and finally release the past. This allows you to identify the agenda of your soul and also to identify the souls of every other person who's been involved in any really important event in your life. There's a process in the course, Ariel, that allows us to get closer to, if not right inside of, the soul's agenda, the agenda of the other souls who have interacted with us in an important way. It's called the soul logic process. It's extremely powerful and allows us to at last understand why those interactions have been what they have been.
All right, so step number six is about affirm the deepest truth of who you are, so you access your new life.
We're talking here about how to differentiate between what you're doing and what you're being. This allows you to end self-judgment and be free from self-criticism.
Does that mean we're going to get rid of the choir that's always telling us how bad and wrong we are?
Exactly, precisely. We're talking about secrets of creating inner peace and outer tranquility in the moment-to-moment of your everyday experience, so that you'll no longer be negatively affected by what happens to you, but instead you'll see meaning and divine purpose in everything that happens through you. This is about a dramatic shift in the way you experience life, Ariel, from what happens to you to what happens through you. And then in step seven, the final step of this course, we talk about reuniting with the divine so that you can create your reality anew every single day of your life. I'm going to say something unusual here now. We're talking about a unique process. This course contains a most unique, one-of-a-kind process by which anyone can have their own conversation with God whenever and as often as they wish. You know, the one thing I've been asked by people all over the world is, how can I have my own conversation with God? Can I even have my own conversation with God? And the answer, of course, is yes. And in this course, we offer a process that allows people to do exactly that, a unique process by which you may have your own conversation with God whenever and as often as you wish. And my process offers you a chance to achieve the results you've been longing for, the results that you've been waiting for, hoping for all of your life, and to achieve those results faster than you ever thought was possible. What you're really getting is the most comprehensive and effective version of this program I've ever developed or ever taught.
So let's just take a moment then to focus on how the course is structured and why it's set up the way that it is.
Let me tell you now, item by item, exactly what this course involves. First, 7 weekly audio lessons with my teachings and insights and guidance to help you absorb and integrate every step of this transformational process. You'll also have access to 7 Q&A sessions that will allow you to dive more deeply into the material that I've covered in each of those weekly course sessions and to explore aspects of it that you might not have understood completely, that you might have questions about. Then we offer PDF transcripts that summarize each weekly course session, as well 7 PDFs containing specific practice and reflection questions. These are inquiries that I've written especially for the course to help you experience and to absorb the material from each session on a much deeper level. You'll also have access to our exclusive online community, and talk about another powerful aspect of this course. This is a group of people from around the world who are taking the course with you, and you'll find additional connection and support with this group, as well as a chance to offer support to others in a safe and compassionate environment. I'm telling you guys, by the time today's seminar is over, you'll have an idea of all the tools and strategies you'll need in order to bring these teachings into your life in a way that makes sense to you.
So, if you're not looking at the course information page yet, you can just click on the course link on the webcast page, or you can simply type into your browser conversationswithgodcourse.com and then scroll all the way down to the button where you can just select your payment option. And if you've ever done self-development work, you probably know that a weekly session with a coach or therapist can cost you as much as $400 or $500 a month.
You know what I'm proud of? I'm proud of, Ariel, that we're offering this program as a structure to not only allow people's life to change, but to develop at the deepest level. And also, and this is important to me, at a cost that makes it accessible as possible, as affordable as possible to as many people as possible. That's powerful and that's important to me.
And it's, you know what, it's going to be important to a lot of people who've tuned in today as well, because getting you in this format, in this way, with this much depth, if they try to actually get on a plane and go somewhere to see you, the plane ticket alone is more than that.
That's exactly right.
Now, I also want you to know that taking this step is completely without risk, because you're going to have 14 days from the start of the course, that's 2 full weeks, to experience the Conversations with God course and feel the changes as it inspires and transforms your life. During this time, if you decide for any reason that the course isn't making your life better or it just isn't right for you, just let us know and we'll refund your money, no questions asked. Now, Neil, we have just a few minutes left, and I'd love to have you answer some frequently asked questions about the course. So here's one of the things we often hear. How will I know if the process is working?
Well, that's an easy question to answer. Your whole life will feel different. Your whole reason for getting up in the morning will feel different. The energy with which you move through your life will be different. And the experiences you're having in your life will be different. And those things can happen suddenly, very quickly, almost in some cases, almost overnight. Attitudes can shift within 24 hours. Exterior realities shift because of the interior attitude shift that people have. So they'll experience more abundance in every way, not just financial abundance, but abundance of all the wonderful things in life. Abundance of peace, happiness, joy, prosperity, understanding, companionship, and love. All the things we search for in our lives. And also an abundance of solutions. You know what'll happen?
mind. What you'll know that the process is working when you suddenly start feeling that you have more solutions than you have problems. And that's been my experience in life. I just realized, wow, you know what? For every problem that I imagine is confronting me, for every challenge that's coming down the pike toward me in my life, I find that even before I ask, I'm starting to hear the solutions because I've learned how to connect with my soul and the divine wisdom within me. That's the point of the course, and that's the result of the course.
Perfect. How would you say this course is different from other spiritual online courses?
I think the content is much richer. I don't know of any other online course that offers this kind of in-depth instruction, guidance, as I mentioned a minute ago, in how to connect with your soul, how to have your own conversation with God, to say nothing of expansions of these points. It's so content rich. It is so powerful in what it shares with other people, but it comes from an entirely different place. This course comes from what I learned in my conversations with God. And without wanting to make it sound like I think it's better than any other course, but the question was not what makes it better, but what makes it different. That's what makes it different from other courses. There's no other course online that I know of that emerges from a dialogue with deity and offers an insight into how to connect directly with one's soul.
Another question, what kind of transformation can I expect?
I think you'll be happier. I hate to sound so almost predictable, but I really think that you'll be happier in your life, more peaceful, more serene, more content, and feel more capable. You know what? What's not going to change is that life challenges are not going to stop coming at you. It isn't like all of a sudden as of tomorrow morning, you'll never have another problem, never have another challenge, never have another obstacle or feel that you have one in your life. That's not going to change. What will change is your ability to negotiate those obstacles, to move through those challenges, to meet those moments feeling equipped, ready and prepared, and to do so with such a level of peace and serenity that the problem itself almost dissolves even as it's forming itself. That's what will change. That's what transformation will occur in your life, at least if my life has been any indication of that, and it has.
Okay, last question.
Yeah.
Will I begin to have my own conversations with God?
You are having a conversation with God every single day of your life. You will not begin to have conversations with God, but you will begin to be aware of them, to know how to move into them more fully, more richly, more presently. All of us are having conversations with God all the time. I am advised by God. However, most of us are not aware of it. We're calling it something else. Serendipity, intuition, a moment of inspiration, what a divine coincidence. You will have an awareness of your conversation with God and an ability to hear that conversation clearly, to engage it powerfully, and to allow it to move through your life as something that changes your everyday experience in ways you couldn't possibly have imagined.
Thank you. So before we leave you, Neil, do you have any final thoughts you want to share with us?
Well, I guess, Arielle, I would like to invite people who are listening to us now to take a moment to consider the possibility that you have placed this doorway before you. As you have been placing answers in front of yourself for years and years, I want you to consider the possibility that the information about this course that you've heard here has not come to you as a random coincidence, but that yet again, your soul has placed in front of you the information for which you have been longing. If you can feel that in any way, I hope you'll decide to join me. I've seen firsthand how people's lives have changed from taking this course. I do hope you'll join with me. I love this course. I really do. It's one of the most powerful, powerful instruments I've ever created, I've ever developed, and I can't wait for you to join our community and get the tools and support that have helped so many people, thousands, actually, around the world. So thanks again to all of you for joining us today. It's been a delight and a privilege to spend this time with you.